Cut the Fat Podcast is brought to you by Dr. Ray Heinisch, Blythe Allberg, and cutthefatpodcast.com. All right, hello everybody. My name is Dr. Ray Heinisch, and I am so thrilled to say that I'm joined here in the virtual studio with none other than Jonathan Baylor, author of the fantastic book, The Calorie Myth. Hey, Jonathan, congratulations on your new book.
Thank you so much, Ray. Congratulations on your new person.
Ah, yes, my new little baby girl. Thank you very much, sir.
My pleasure.
So, I want to start with what may be a bit of a review for our listeners, since we've had you on twice before. And that is the big question, because the book's titled The Calorie Myth, right? So what is the big calorie myth?
There's three calorie myths, Ray, but the primary overarching one is this focus we've been given for the past 50 years on calorie quantity instead of food quality. We can break that down, but really, over the past 50 years, the fundamental shift that has taken place in the nutrition and exercise community that's corresponded with deteriorating health and really overall badness from a health and fitness perspective is we've taken all foods and equivalence class them and all exercise and equivalence class that with all food by saying it's all about calories. And that's created a big fat mess.
How do you mean a big fat mess?
Ray, you and I know, and all the listeners know intuitively, that a can of Coca-Cola is not better than an avocado simply because it has fewer calories in it. A cigarette has no calories in it. That doesn't mean smoking cigarettes is harmless. Calories are a piece of the equation. Some people see the title of the book and they think that I am advocating this myth, which comes up every 10 years, which is that calories don't count. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what the science says. What the modern science says is that calories count, but it can't be required to count calories. There's a big difference and a big distinction there.
So what exactly is your mission here? Like, what is your goal? Are you in a fight against this whole concept of dieting?
Absolutely, Ray. And that's why calories are so nefarious. Calories are a quantity measure. As long as we focus on calories, we're going to hear the same thing we've heard for the past 40 years, which is quantity-based guidance of eat less quantity, exercise more quantity, because we're trying to manipulate this caloric balance equation. And that is simply wrong. It's intuitive, but it's wrong. I like to call it the flat earth theory of fat loss because, like saying the earth is flat, it intuitively makes sense. If you look out your window, it looks like the earth is flat. But once you understand science, say the law of gravity, for example, you understand that the world does not have to be flat and the people on the bottom won't fall off because there's this law called gravity. And similarly, when you understand the modern science of eating and exercise, and you understand, for example, that your hypothalamus automatically regulates bodily functions, you can start to understand that while calories count, it can't be required for you to count calories simply because, if for no other reason, no one knew what a calorie was. Forget about counting them up until the obesity epidemic started. So how can counting these things, which no one even knew about, be required to avoid obesity?
Now, you know, in the Calorie Myth book, you say that it's easier for your metabolism to slow down than to burn fat. In fact, you say that eating less is worse than doing nothing. So explain yourself, Jonathan Baylor. Are you really saying that it would be better for someone to just keep on living their lives, eating the standard American diet, than to go on a diet?
It would be better for 95.4% of us. So Ray, I like to always root everything in science. And because we root things in science, things are often more nuanced. So, for example, the reason I said specifically 95.4% of people would be better doing nothing than they would just eating less of the standard Western diet is because studies have shown that 95.4% of the time, simply eating less fails. And what it means to fail means that people regain all of the weight they lost and then some, and they experience the long-term metabolic consequences of weight cycling. So yes, it is absolutely better to do nothing than it is to take an approach which will not work and will leave you worse off than when you started. Ray, it's a bit like saying it's better to take no medication than it is to take the wrong medication.
Mm, that's a really good way of putting it, especially me being a pharmacist. I get that. So, you know, recently we had a listener who I'm assuming is no longer a listener who was not happy with our stance on weight loss. She wrote this, okay? She wrote, "The idea of eat more to weigh less. Ridiculous. Calories are calories. Energy in, energy out. All this drivel about resetting metabolism, etc., is patently untrue in my experience. The idea that cardio is useless for weight loss, also untrue. I had a trainer who was trying to foist these ideas on me. It simply didn't work. Once I cut calories and stepped up cardio, the weight fell way off." So, you know, how do you respond to these people who seemingly do manage to lose weight counting calories and spend a couple of hours a day on a treadmill? What do you say to them?
Two important things, Ray. The first is that I don't think anyone is claiming that starvation won't make you temporarily lose weight. It absolutely will. If nothing, look at war-torn countries or countries that experience a famine. It's not as if people become morbidly obese in these circumstances. But that said, you can also lose weight by cutting off your leg. That's non-debatable. I mean, you could drop 50 pounds right now in an instant by sawing off your right leg. However, we would never recommend that to someone because it's not sustainable and it has terrible side effects. So the question we should be asking isn't so much, well, what causes me to lose weight in the short term? Because everyone's lost weight in the short term. The question is, how do we maintain slimness and happiness throughout our lives? That's the problem. So for the 4.6% of the population who is able to tolerate hunger and discomfort and doing math at the dinner table and carrying a calculator around with them when they eat, that's fine. If that's what works for them, that's fabulous. But the question is, what about the other 95.4% of us? I'm not here to say eating 1,200 calories per day for, let's say, a 200-pound active man won't cause weight loss. What I'm trying to say is, from a scientific perspective and from a practicality perspective, that's analogous to telling that man to saw off his leg, because if you put a person, man or woman, in a state of caloric and nutrition deficiency, they're going to live their life in second gear. It's like they've got a rain jacket draped over their brain. I mean, just imagine trying to run your car without having any fuel in it compared to running your car with premium high octane gasoline in it. So the question is not, can it work? It's, what are the side effects? Is it the optimal approach? Is it the most effective approach? So that's part one. Part two is, and this is, I will be very black and white here, anyone who says a calorie is a calorie is simply misinformed. And all they need to do is go onto Google or their favorite search engine and type in isocaloric studies. There's no shortage of clinical trials which put people into two groups. Both groups eat the exact same number of calories, but they vary the sources of the calories. And these studies consistently show that in isocaloric circumstances, aka all people consume the same quantity of calories, but we vary quality, that weight changes between the groups. That is a fact, and it's non-debatable.
And, you know, you mentioned side effects, and I think that's a very interesting point, because as you can tell based on this person's review, she does not appear to be a very happy person. And it's very rare to find a dieter, somebody who's a chronic dieter, who's actually happy. Why is that?
The starvation isn't healthy, Ray. And I know that sounds silly, but we need to remind ourselves of that. Starvation, being in a state of deficiency, that it being deficient isn't a good thing. If someone were to come up to you on the street and be like, "Hey, you're deficient," you would say, "What? No, I'm not. Stop calling me deficient." So, I mean, there's so many analogies, but just imagine saying, I'm going to ensure that I have fewer weeds in my garden by just not watering my garden. I'm going to put my garden in a water deficient state in an effort to reduce the number of weeds. Well, yeah, you're going to reduce the number of weeds, but you're going to make your garden ugly and it's slowly going to be dying. And that's what happens to your body. When you don't give it enough of the things it needs to thrive, it doesn't thrive. And that's what we were all put here to do, to thrive.
You know, many years ago, it reminds me of a story that I was in a relationship with a woman, and by the way, not my wife. This is way before I met my wife. And I was hanging out at her place, and I was just hanging out on the couch reading a book. It was a Saturday morning. And she walks in the room, and out of nowhere, she says, "Get out. You're going to have to leave. I'm frustrated, and you're going to have to leave." And I was literally doing nothing. I was just sitting there reading a book on my iPad. And so it got me thinking, and eventually it came out what the problem was. You see, she had started hanging out with a new friend who, you know, I had never met her. The only thing I knew about her was that her name was Jenny Craig. And all of a sudden, her whole mood shifted when she started going to Jenny Craig. And I mean, it's not to beat up on that one program. It's to basically bring out the fact that if our ultimate goal as human beings is to be happy, you know, we oftentimes think that what we need to be happy is to simply lose weight. And when that happens by any means necessary, then we will be happy. But the reality is that you can't do that, because even if you did successfully lose weight, but you walked around miserable, would you achieve your goal? And the answer is, of course, no.
It's of course no. And Ray, I'm going to take this even one step further and say that there's not being happy, and then there's straight up being oppressed. And I don't go here too often because I get really fired up, but yours is a show that I think is a good forum for us to talk about this. And that's this idea, because it's mostly directed at women. It's not directed at men as much, is this message to shrink yourself, to shrink down, to rip calories out of your body, to be smaller, to not finish your dinner. Oh, you're going out on a date? Oh, make sure you order a salad. Shrink yourself. Fade into the background. That is such a ridiculous message for us to be, well, not us, not you or I, for the mainstream to be communicating to the brilliant females in this world. This isn't the 1930s anymore. Women shouldn't be told to shrink themselves or to deprive or starve themselves in any sense of the word.
Absolutely. And, you know, while we're on that subject, Jonathan, let's talk about the concept of starvation mode, because I feel like a lot of people fear that if they don't eat every 3 hours and eat enough calories, that their body will go into starvation mode. Now, this is kind of the flip side of the picture, right? In fact, one of our listeners asked on our Facebook page, she said, "Is the starvation mode triggered by food volume or calories? Basically, if I'm eating tons of veggies, fruits, and proteins, but don't achieve the quote-unquote calorie goal, will my body go into starvation mode?" So what's your take on that question? And I'd be interested to hear any other thoughts that you have on the starvation mode, specifically how to avoid it.
Ray, this is a critical, critical point, because people, especially on the internet, get into these debates, these heated debates about, are people like you, Ray, and me saying that you can burn fat when you're not in a state of caloric deficiency? And here's the distinction that is absolutely critical to make. Imagine we have a person, let's call that person Billy. Billy has 100 pounds of excess fat on his body. Let's say that the whole 3,500 calories in a pound of fat is true. Billy has 350,000 calories already available to him without eating at all. So let's say Billy didn't eat anything. Technically, is Billy in a state of caloric deficit, or does Billy have 350,000 calories available to him? And let's continue this thought experiment. Billy has 100 pounds of excess fat on his body. Why is Billy's brain ever telling Billy to eat? Billy has enough energy, in quotations. He has an abundance of energy. Well, the key distinction here is obesity is not a moral failing. It's a failure of the body's automatic systems to realize what's going on and to instead crave excessive calories coming in versus automatically burning calories that are stored on the body. So when we talk about starvation mode, there's a couple things. One, we have to provide our body with essential things, essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, essential vitamins, essential minerals. Now, once we've provided our body with that which is essential, if our body is healthy, if our gut bacteria is healthy, if our hormones are healthy, if our brain isn't inflamed, well, if we happen to not take in a bunch of calories through our lips, wouldn't it make sense for us to just get those calories from our hips? So I like to say the distinction between starvation mode and fat loss mode. Starvation mode is when you are deficient in required nutrients. Fat burning mode is when you have a healthy body which is able to accurately balance the amount of energy you take in with the amount of energy you already have stored on your body to supplement what you're eating.
So let's talk about this concept of set point, because you go into detail about this concept in the Calorie Myth book. Start off by telling us about what the set point actually is.
The set point is just an abstraction for homeostasis, or the way that all biological organisms work. We all know this intuitively. We were all taught this in high school biology class. Every living organism has a range in which life is possible. There's a reason there is no life on the sun. The environment of the sun is one that is not conducive to life, but the environment on the earth is this range in which life can exist. The same thing applies for your body. Think of your body temperature. There's a body temperature set point. If you go in a cold room, what happens? You get goosebumps, you shiver, your body takes steps to automatically warm you up. Think about your blood sugar. If your blood sugar goes down, your body takes steps to bring it back up. Think about your breath. If you hold your breath, as soon as you stop, you will inhale much more. Imagine not going to the bathroom. Your body just makes you need to go to the bathroom, or you get the point. The body tries to balance itself out. That is how every single system in every single biological organism works. Energy balance is no different. Your body is designed to automatically balance calories in, calories out. They exist, but just like we don't have to consciously monitor breaths in and breaths out, or water in and water out, or vitamin C in and vitamin C out, or thiamine, riboflavin, vitamin D, vitamin E, vitamin K, anything else, we can't have to consciously regulate calories, again, simply because we couldn't even do that until about 40 years ago.
And at that point, that is a point where we were healthier than we are today.
Exactly. So this idea of the set point is simply saying that your body has a range, a body composition that it is targeting, and that when you starve yourself, when you use these quantity-based approaches of eat less, exercise more, you are fighting against that system. It's like trying to hold your breath, or trying not to sleep, or trying not to go to the bathroom. If you can tolerate a life of misery and pain, yes, and you can override your body and fight through it for the rest of your life, more power to you. Or you could work to change that range that your body automatically works to balance you out at. And Ray, we've all experienced this, right? You turn 30, you turn 40, you turn 50. It seems like, despite your best efforts, your body is trying to hold a different amount of fat on it. Why is that? Or why do naturally thin people, why are they naturally thin? How does that work? They can eat and eat and eat, not exercise. How does that work? It's because there are different set points. And if we try to fight our set point, we will lose. But we can change our set point via food and exercise quality, not calorie quantity.
Well, first, why does set point go up? If the body wants to resist that weight change, why does set point go up in us?
There are three things which cause the set point to go up. But the most obvious or easiest to understand is we experience a Our brain, for example, loses its ability, becomes desensitized. So, for example, we hear about diabetes or hear about a losing insulin sensitivity. Well, imagine you have a condition like that in your brain, where hormones, which are designed to tell you when you actually need to eat and when you don't need to eat, and which tell your body to burn fat versus storing fat, these become dysregulated. And in fact, your body wants to stay regulated, so it produces more of them and more of them and more of them. So now you have, for example, with the hormone leptin, up to 25 times in obese people, the amount of leptin circulating in your bloodstream than a non-obese person. When you have these really elevated levels of hormones, your brain essentially gets confused and it starts to think that what we know is an elevated level of hormones is actually a normal level of hormones. And when you have that new normal, your body weight set point changes as well to be a new normal. So as your gut bacteria, your hormones, and your brain become, for lack of better terms, inflamed, your body becomes confused and needs to turn the, let's call it, volume up in the signals it's sending. That volume getting turned up causes excess fat storage.
So what are the steps that someone can take to reset their set point to a new lower level? I mean, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it? That's what people really want to know when they say, help me lose weight, right?
Exactly. The good news is that it can't be complicated, as evidenced by the fact that basically every single person who ever lived prior to the previous three or the current three generations did it without trying. The rates of obesity were sub 3%. 100 years ago. The incidence of diabetes and prediabetes was 100% lower 100 years ago. Only until recently, only until we started thinking about calories, only until we started exercising, not saying that those things caused it, but think about it. No one tried to be slim throughout the entirety of human history, yet we had more success with it. Why? What did they do? They ate things found directly in nature, and they moved their bodies. So how do you reset your set point? You do what people were put here to do. Eat things you find directly in nature and move. And it's so commonsensical. But think about any other species on the planet. Why is it that there is not an obesity epidemic in any other species, except for maybe domesticated animals, right? Like cows who get fed corn, become sick and obese. Dogs and cats that are fed not the types of food they were designed to eat, they become obese. But every other species on the planet, when it is left to its own devices and it eats the foods it has eaten for generations, it avoids obesity effortlessly. So did people. And we can, again, if we just go back to eating those things which don't clog up our system and don't cause this inflammation. And we'll never get to that point, though, if we're thinking about food quantity, because it's the quality of food that we're talking about. It's talking about eating things found directly in nature and letting your body balance calories for you. But if we think calorie quantity is the key, we won't do that. We'll eat convenience foods. We'll eat packaged and processed foods because manufacturers shrink the serving sizes and tell us 100-calorie snack packs are healthy. They're not. They're addictive and toxic.
So if you don't mind, could you review with our listeners the four calorie quality factors that influence the set point?
I use the acronym SANE to abbreviate these four things. And it's really critical because we've all heard eat healthy. But the problem is healthy, as it's been defined for the past 40 years, is actually terribly unhealthy. And healthy is a scientific thing. You can study it. It's no one's opinion. So what the scientific community has shown is that there's four factors that determine the quality of a calorie. And those are the SANE stands for satiety, how quickly a food fills us up and how long it keeps us full. For example, Pringles, which advertise once you pop, you can't stop, are telling us if you eat these calories, you will not get satisfied. That is the point of light beer. The point of light beer is to enable you to consume calories without feeling satisfied. So it's good to eat satisfying calories, right? So you want to eat satisfying calories. The A in stain stands for aggressive. This has to do with the hormonal insulin and blood sugar response. We want to eat unaggressive foods, foods that don't spike our blood sugar. The N stands for nutrition. This is how many essential amino acids, essential fatty acids, vitamins, and minerals we get per calorie of a food. And then efficiency stands for how easily our body can take a given source of calories and store it as body fat. For example, protein, which isn't an energy source for our body, it's a structural component, is really inefficient at being stored as fat because a huge number of chemical reactions have to take place to convert protein into body fat. Whereas starch, for example, is much easier for our body to store as fat. So all things being held equal, eating inefficient calories will burn more fat than eating efficient calories. So that's satiety, aggression, nutrition, and efficiency.
And I'll point out that each one of those are really well spelled out in the book, The Calorie Myth. And you can go through and you give details about how to know if a food kind of meets each one of those required factors, right?
Absolutely, Ray. And as you would expect, with any diet, and what readers will see when they read The Calorie Myth is that it's very much not a diet. You got to ask yourself, you got to take a step back and do like a common sense check, because health can't be hard. If health was hard, we would have died out as a species a long time ago. The single most basic ability any living organism has, like every element of our DNA is designed to help us not die. So that can't be hard. So ironically, and actually what we should expect from a common sense perspective, is the sanest foods in the world are foods you find directly in nature. And doesn't it make sense, regardless of your belief system, if you believe in intelligent design, isn't it really intelligent for a designer to design us to run on things that were available to us throughout our entire history? And if you believe in evolution, wouldn't it make sense that we evolved to things to eat things that are found throughout our evolutionary history, thinking that this, for example, food guide pyramid or my plate, which is heavily starch-based and just allows for all sorts of things in moderation, is an optimal human diet, makes no sense considering that those foods, in quotation, weren't available to us for the entirety of human history.
So how does this book differ from the Paleolithic lifestyle?
The paleo lifestyle is, I don't like to call it a diet, because it's really such a common sense approach to eating. It's saying just eat things that our ancestors would have eaten. And it is an amazing template. It is an amazing basis for things. What my work tries to do is to, for example, find, even within the paleo diet, what would be the sanest foods you could eat? For example, agave is found directly in nature. It is. But we have science, so why not use common sense combined with science? So, for example, high fructose corn syrup is unnatural, and we all know it's toxic and terrible for us. But most formulations of high fructose corn syrup, remember this is high fructose corn syrup, have about 42% fructose in them. Natural agave has 90% fructose in it. So you could imagine someone, if the only criteria we used is if it's found in nature and if our ancestors had access to it, then it's okay to eat. Well, then even tobacco would be okay for us to eat because it's found in nature. Technically, snake venom is found in nature, so it would be good for us. So what I like to do is take paleo or even veganism, vegetarianism, South Beach, low carb, any of these approaches, and simply say, within that approach, how can you be sane paleo? How can you be sane low carb? How can you be sane South Beach? How can you be a sane vegan? How can you be sane kosher, sane halal? The point is, how can you use proven modern science as well as common sense to optimize whatever lifestyle you choose to live?
So let me ask you, let's say that we have someone who's been living off of McDonald's for the last 10 years, is, let's say, 80 pounds overweight, and they read the book and they follow the plan. When could they expect their set point to recover? Is it something that happens almost overnight? Does it take a month, 2 months? I mean, what's your answer for that?
Think about, think about a broken metabolism, like you would think about a broken bone. So if you break your ankle, how long it's going to take to heal depends. For example, if you've broken your ankle many, many times, it's going to take longer every time you break your ankle. If you break your ankle and you don't stay off it completely and you don't ice it, it's going to take longer. If you break your ankle and you're 65 and diabetic, it's going to take longer to heal than if you break your ankle and you're 6 years old and healthy. So how long it takes to repair your metabolism is the same, in quotations, as how long it would take for any part of your body to repair itself. It varies depending on how damaged it is, how frequently you've damaged it, your age, your stress, your sleep, your nutrition. But as a general rule of thumb, this type of lifestyle, a sane lifestyle, will show you immediate results in terms of your mood, your sexual performance, your energy levels, your sleep quality. Then, depending on where you are in your life, for example, whether you're taking certain medications, sleep, stress, so on and so forth, you're looking at anywhere from immediate results in terms of your waistline to it taking upwards of, we've seen this, I call it, this is just my made-up term, the delayed waterfall effect. And we've seen individuals who for, let's say, 2-3 months really don't see too much in terms of a body composition change. But then seemingly, much like with a broken ankle, where one day you can't walk on your ankle, the next day you can, individuals wake up. They don't change anything about the way they're eating or exercising. However, they have gone sane and have been that way for a while, and their body just starts to change. And it gradually keeps doing that. And they're enjoying what they're eating, and they're completely full and satisfied, so they can keep that up. And it's a gradual change. So as a general rule of thumb, Ray, if you've never weight cycled in your entire life and you're healthy and you're not stressed, you will see immediate body composition results, no question. However, the more you've weight cycled, the more stress you're under, the older you are, the more medications you're on, the longer it's going to take. And sadly, I can't give you an exact timeline, but hopefully that maybe gives me some credibility, because anyone who tells you, I guarantee you, you can lose this much fat in this much time, is a bit like someone calling you on the phone and saying, hey, I've got this great stock deal, and if you give me $10,000, I guarantee you I'll make you this much money in this amount of time. That's not the way the world works.
Yeah, and I got to applaud you, because you know, a lot of the books that are being published today have kind of taken advantage of this desire for people to get instant results. And a lot of them are claiming 14 pounds in 14 days and, you know, 30 pounds in 30 days. And, you know, your book doesn't do that. Your book just says eat the right way, exercise the right way, sleep the right way, think the right way, and you will get results. And we can't really say when, but we know if you stick with it, it will happen.
Exactly, Ray. And excuse me, part of the challenge with these approaches which guarantee results is that literally can't work. Let me give you an example, because the only way you could try to guarantee results is through calorie math. And calorie math is wrong. These other approaches might say something like, okay, you're going to create a caloric deficit of 3,500. No, let's do an actual example here, Ray. Let's say that you're on a diet which says if you cut 1,000 calories per day, you're going to eat 7,000 fewer calories per week. There's 3,500 calories in a pound of fat. Therefore, you should lose 2 pounds of fat per week. Okay, that's what these books will lead us to believe, right? Is that fair?
That's fair.
Okay, now let's actually compare that to the real world and actual data. So a report came out in September of this year that showed that according to the best data we have available, the average American male is consuming 1,000 more calories per day than he needs to eat, according to the best data we have available. Now, hold on a second. If that data is true, and we have every reason to believe that it is, the average American male is in a 1,000 calorie per day caloric surplus, which means they're eating 7,000 too many calories per week, which means they should gain 2 pounds of fat per week, which means they should gain over 100 pounds of fat per year. That is clearly not happening. In fact, if we trace the data back to the 1970s, there was a study done at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which shows us that according to our caloric intake, which has gone up, the average American should weigh well over 1,000 pounds. we are eating too many calories. The question is why we're eating those many calories. But the bigger question is why doesn't any American basically weigh over 1,000 pounds? We've only gained 20 pounds in a time period we should have gained over 1,000. The reason for that is your body isn't a math equation. It's a biological organism. And anyone who claims that your body works like a math equation is simply using made up mythical metabolic math, which is analogous to saying the world is flat.
Amen. So, Naomi, one of our listeners wanted me to ask you about carb intake. Do you have any guidelines for how many grams of carbs or starches the average person should or should not consume? Or do you just say if you eat the right foods, you really don't have to count carbs?
I personally really like the approach you just mentioned. The if you eat the right kinds of foods, you shouldn't have to count anything. That said, there's two important things to note when it comes to carbohydrate. First and foremost, and even the most staunch high carbohydrate advocates cannot argue this point, and that is that there's no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. It simply doesn't exist. There's essential proteins, there's essential fats. There is no such thing as an essential carbohydrate. So it is the one macronutrient that is not required for life. That said, carbs aren't bad, fat isn't bad, protein isn't bad. There's high and low quality versions of all macronutrients. When it comes to carbs, the single sanest, highest quality food in the world are non-starchy vegetables, vegetables you could eat raw. These are carbohydrate. These are the single most important foods we should be eating. So people sometimes say that a sane lifestyle is a low carbohydrate lifestyle. That's simply misinformed. The single most important part of a sane lifestyle is eating a dramatic amount of a certain type of carbohydrate, non-starchy vegetable. But then people say, well, what about starches? Like potatoes, for example, is the most common one I hear. Keep in mind that eating is a zero-sum game. What that means is just in the field of economics, there's this term zero-sum game, meaning if you do one thing, you're not doing another thing. So if you eat, when you eat whole natural food, you get full fast. So let's say you get full on 2,000 calories. If you eat 500 calories of starch, you're not eating 500 calories of nutrient-dense proteins or non-starchy vegetables. So the question really isn't, can you eat starch? You can, but is it the best carb for you to be eating? I simply recommend, and the research simply recommends, that you focus on the highest quality, most nutrient-dense carbohydrates available, and those are non-starchy vegetables and low-sugar fruit, not starches.
Awesome. Great. Lynn, another one of our listeners, wanted me to ask you, how do you fit it all in? You know, and this part's my addition to her question. She's basically, you know, I'm sure that one of your biggest criticisms is, if I lived this way, I'd be shackled to my kitchen. Seriously, Jonathan, I have two kids, a full-time job, and a needy husband. When am I supposed to chop vegetables and make food like you describe? I mean, that's the type of criticism I'm sure you get.
Absolutely, Ray. And it's we have to make a little bit of a paradigm shift because that is spot on. If there's no planning involved, like if we think that we need to prepare every meal, like lunch, okay, chop up vegetables, dinner, chop up vegetables, breakfast, chop up vegetables, that can't work. But what you will find is that individuals who live this lifestyle successfully, two things. One, they cook in bulk. So you cook a lot, say on a Saturday afternoon. You cook a bunch of meals and you're set for a long time. The other thing to keep in mind, and I think this is a really, really important point, Ray, is that the lifestyle we're describing here is much easier than many other lifestyles. Let's take one example, veganism, vegetarianism. There are hundreds of millions of vegetarians around the world. Those individuals don't eat any meat or any fish. For many of us, that would be absurdly hard, except that these hundreds of millions of people do it. Ray, I personally don't think those hundreds and millions of people are better than us or any of your listeners. It's a matter of priority and it's a matter of importance. If a vegetarian can be a vegetarian, if a vegan can be a vegan, if a kosher person can be a kosher person, if a halal individual can be a halal individual, then we can eat whole, delicious foods found in nature if it's important enough to us.
Very good. All right. So, yeah, we're kind of coming to the end here. You and I have done a podcast with Jade Tita on exercise, but I did want to ask you a question because this was another question that Lynn had. And you go into exercise in the book as well. You have a very specific recommendation for how you suggest people exercise. First and foremost, you're not a big fan of just running on the treadmill for 2 hours a day, right?
Absolutely. And Ray, just real quick, the very specific recommendation, so I think this might get to where the question was going, is remember that exercise is very goal specific. So I do have a very specific recommendation in my book, but that's because my book is about something very specific, and that is how to lower your set point, how to reduce inflammation in your brain, how to re-regulate your hormones, and how to heal your gut bacteria. It's not about becoming a better golfer, for example, or becoming a better triathlete. The way you would exercise is very goal specific. So the type of exercise I recommend in the calorie myth is one that is predicated on healing your metabolism. It is very specific, but it's got a very specific goal.
And what do you recommend for folks who have limitations due to injury or health issues?
I'm right there with them, Ray. In fact, that's why this form of exercise known as eccentric training, I personally love it so much. I've blown my right knee out 3 times, twice playing football, once playing basketball. In fact, I actually didn't get the third surgery, so I have no ACL nor left meniscal disc in my right leg, and it's been that way for 10 years. So if someone told you I blew my knee out, I have lived for 10 years in that state of having a blown out knee. I've also torn my left pec. I've also torn my labrum in my right shoulder. I've also torn my right hip flexor, all from playing sports. So I know what it's like to be injured. That said, doing super slow, controlled, safe resistance training is one of the safest, most sustainable forms of exercise in the world. In fact, if you go to a gym or you go to a clinic, the individuals most likely to know about eccentric training are the physical therapists, because eccentric training has been used in physical therapy circles for many, many years, simply for the reasons we've talked about here. It's so safe.
Seriously, dude, I think I'm in love with you.
We got a little bro.
That's right. That's right, man. You know, it's rare that you meet nutrition nerds out there these days, and you know, you truly are one to the core, Jonathan.
I am a nerd to the core. I cannot deny that.
Well, I just want to thank you very much for joining us. Please tell everybody how they can tell them about the book. Tell them how they can get in touch with you or your organization and get involved.
I would so deeply appreciate if individuals could go over to caloriemythbook.com. Again, that's caloriemythbook.com. You can sign up for a bunch of free resources and learn more about the book, learn more about this research. And really, it is, I got to tell you, if you go to Amazon, Amazon just lowered the price. So I think the book is less than $16 on Amazon. And I personally guarantee you that you will not find a more transformative way to spend $16 than to grab a copy of The Calorie Myth. Because, and I'm not just saying that because I wrote it, it's changed my life. It's the work. It's not really even my work. It's the work of hundreds of brilliant researchers over decades. And all I've done is taken that work and synthesized it and simplified it and applied it so that you can live this modern science of food and exercise quality rather than calorie quantity. These theories of 50 years ago, it will literally change the way you see eating and exercise for the rest of your life. It will simplify your life, and it will slim you down.
So the website again is caloriemythbook.com.
Caloriemythbook.com. And you can also just pick up a copy of The Calorie Myth anywhere books are sold.
All right, Jonathan. Well, thank you so much for joining us here on Cut the Fat Podcast. It's always a joy to have you.
Ray, it's always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
As always, you can learn more about us on Facebook. Simply search for Cut the Fat Podcast, all one word. Like the page, get involved with the community. You can also download our podcast on iTunes. Subscribe to it so that it gets automatically downloaded to your iPod, iPhone, or iPad. And, of course, visit us at cutthefatpodcast.com. All right, guys, we'll see you next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
got something new, a little twist of what you know is true.